Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, this evening, I guess, June 20th, 1790, it's the dinner table compromise between James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, convened by Thomas Jefferson. This was a consequential meeting that took place on Maiden Lane in New York, brokered by Jefferson to bring the two former friends and now definitely political rivals together to discuss a few key issues that the brand new country was facing and was kind of threatening to sort of grind the new government to a halt. And there are lots of myths and facts about this meeting, and I want to get a couple out of the way right now. I don't think we know what they ate. And in fact, it may not have been a dinner meeting at all. It may have just been a get together, but it is called the dinner meeting. And so I went on Yelp and I looked at restaurants that are currently on Maiden Lane. And so there's a Five Guys, there's a Potbelly, there's a Just Salad. I don't know if those were around in 1790, but we can
certainly
imagine.
Certainly Just Salad.
Just Salad, you think? I was thinking, well, unfortunately, it's Three Guys, not Five Guys. That would be appropriate. But there were probably Potbellies.
There certainly were Potbellies.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But listeners, use your imagination about this dinner. But here to talk about what we actually know about this dinner compromise are, as always, Nicole Hammer of Columbia and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hey, Jody.
Hey there.
And of course, I think a lot of people probably know this is the subject of that song from Hamilton, The Room Where It Happened, mm-hmm. which is really, I listened to it for the first time actually this morning. I had managed to avoid Hamilton. And really, the song is mostly about kind of like power and compromise and the backroom dealings as much as it is about what actually happens in this room. And I think that that's a really interesting theme that maybe we'll mm-hmm. get to and we'll build to. But in terms of the specifics of this meeting, the story is Jefferson brokers it. He sort of realizes that Madison and Hamilton are in New York. And what is it that Madison wants and what is it that Hamilton wants as they're going into this meeting?
So the big issue at the heart of this is what you're going to do with all of the debt that the states are carrying as you're trying to form this new country. And what Hamilton wants is he wants the federal government to take up all of that debt, to assume mm-hmm. all of that debt, because that's going to free up the states. It's going to bring them together closer to the federal government, and it's going to help to establish and secure the full faith and credit of the United States as something that is worth having. So it's going to help rev up the economic engines of the United States. Madison and other Virginians are like, wait a second, we don't have any state debt. Yeah. Well, what are we doing here? We're not going to pay money to the federal government to cover the debts of all of these other states. And so that's really the big impasse, is what do you do when this giant state with all of these giant, figuratively giant leaders are opposed to this kind of settlement because they don't have the kind of debt that needs to be settled?
Yeah, when you've already paid your debt, as Virginia has, having everybody else get a free lunch, so to speak, does not really rub them the right way. And so it becomes this huge contest, not just about debt, but also how much control the federal government will have. How much will they be able to intervene or make these kind of demands on the states? And then it also is about, you know, the capital. Where should we place the capital? Where is going to be the center of political power in this newly independent country? There's a lot to discuss.
Right. But that's the kind of two issues that then are getting compromised and worked out here. Is Hamilton is sort of, he's the Treasury Secretary. He believes in consolidation of federal power. And so he's saying, hey, let's do this thing where we take on the debts centrally. And then he recognizes that there's also this other debate about where is the new capital going to be. Jefferson and Madison, Virginians, he sort of recognizes, hey, we can put the capital closer to them, and we'll get into reasons why, and maybe there's this compromise we worked out here. But, you know, but on the debt thing, it is interesting because, you know, I mean, this is a naive thing to say, but on the one hand, like, someone saying, hey, we'll take on your debts, seems like a good deal. but, you know, obviously Virginia doesn't like it because they've already paid off their debts, and so they realize that now their lot is going to be tied up with others. But, of course, there's this larger principle at play here, too, that it's not just specifically about the debt, but it is about consolidation of power and economic decision-making and so forth. And so I think, you know, obviously Hamilton recognizes that that's what's at stake. It's not mm-hmm. just the specific debt, but this idea that the U.S. Treasury will be the you know, everything will be subservient to that decision making and that fiscal policy.
It's also, you know, Virginia was a super wealthy state. Yeah. So, like, the idea, I mean, and part of that is because of its dependence on slavery. There was so much wealth that was coming out of that state. The first 4 out of 5 presidents are from Virginia. You know, Virginia really was this a thriving political and economic state that a lot of other states were trying to replicate, but they weren't there yet. And so for Virginia to kind of be like, hey, we paid our piece, you know, like it's not quite fair when you think about what the other colonies are up against as well.
So to throw in kind of another political crisis that's unfolding at the time, this debate over what to do with states' debts has completely deadlocked the Congress. And for somebody like Thomas Jefferson, that's a real crisis, because here you've established this new government. It's handling a really big problem, and it turns out it can't do anything.
Yeah.
And if they can't figure out a way to broker a compromise and actually fix this problem, it is going to be a massive failure of this form of government right from the start. So there's a real investment to getting this problem solved. And that's how these negotiations behind the scenes start to come about.
Yeah, right. That's a really good point. And, you know, I think to that, as we start to look at some of the myths and facts about this, it is not the way that the story sort of initially was told. And maybe Jefferson put it this way, like he literally ran into Hamilton and Madison on the street and was like, hey, you're both in town. Cool. Let's get together and hash this thing out. And in fact, you know, there were probably a bunch of meetings. You know, I know a great Potbelly right around the corner. You know, in fact, there were a bunch of meetings sort of leading up to this, often around this big, big problem that, like, hey, our new government just can't get stuff done. And if it wasn't this thing, it was going to be something else that was going to kind of come to a head and be like, Are we a real country or are we not? Let's turn a little to the capital thing, because there's one version of it that's just, some people were pushing towards Pennsylvania as the sort of like more geographically central to the 13 colonies and the sort of center of power. And then others, like the Virginians mostly, were saying, hey, why don't we do it a little closer to home? And Washington is from Virginia and so forth. Is it really just like convenience? You know, I don't want to take a couple extra days to get to the Capitol. Like, what is really going on here in terms of the location of the Capitol?
I mean, I think it's about, sure, we can throw convenience in there. But, you know, especially when the Capitol finally gets placed in what is carved out of the state of Maryland and of Virginia, the final capital in Washington, D.C., a big part of that is the centrality to the institution of slavery, like having a space that all people who are in political power can come to fairly easy, and that the North will not feel like they have this geographical stronghold. So because Pennsylvania becomes like this state of abolition, it frees, you know, all of its slaves, and it doesn't make it convenient for slaveholders to bring their slaves into the state, because they will be freed if they stay after X amount of days. And so finding a place that's suitable for slaveholders is really a big part of that.
And we should say, because I don't think we've mentioned it yet, for folks who don't recall, that the Capitol was in New York City. And so then the question is, where do we move it next? And they're looking at Philadelphia, and they're looking at this other space. And they actually do move it to Philadelphia for a little while. And there is some supposition that one of the reasons you get like Pennsylvanians to agree to this deal is because they thought that once you move the Capitol to Philadelphia, you weren't actually going to move it all the way down to that swampland down between Maryland and Virginia. They were wrong, but that seems to have come into play for some people.
Yeah. So the compromise as it comes together here basically is that they decide to give to sort of both sides get ostensibly what they want. So the assumption plan, as it comes to be known, the debt assumption plan basically states that, yes, we will consolidate debt at the federal level. Virginia gets $1.5 million of their tax obligation sort of knocked off as an acknowledgement that, hey, you're now all of a sudden taking on some other state's debts. And then they decide that the Capitol, yes, indeed, is going to be in Washington, D.C. Jefferson's role here is interesting. Do we have thoughts on both Jefferson's role as in the room where it happened and compromiser, but then also as teller of this story after the fact, which seems to be very interesting.
Yeah, so Jefferson has this role as convener, which is still something, right? To bring people together, to convene them, to finally make a deal does matter. And he put together the dinner and all that. That's great. And then his account of the dinner was the only surviving account. So, of course, it's a pretty favorable account to Jefferson. It definitely plumps up and expands his role. Mm-hmm. It makes him look like the peacemaker and the keen negotiator. And that account, you know, even though historians have acknowledged that this is a Jefferson-friendly account, they do say that it is essentially accurate in how things came together.
Yeah. But then later, Jefferson kind of claims that Hamilton had sort of duped him here. And, you know, generally speaking, people think of this as a big coup by Hamilton, not an actual coup, but, a, you know, sort of big win by Hamilton at a place where he really got a lot of what he wanted and established himself as a real force. So let's, you know, what is our sense of winners and losers, so to speak, and the legacy of this compromise, which I suppose at the time people walked away feeling like both sides had won, like a good compromise, but very quickly felt, at least two of the three parties felt pretty aggrieved.
Well, Jefferson and Madison don't get Broadway plays named after them, so I think that's a big part of it. No, but I think part of it is that because Hamilton really, he showboats. He kind of takes over and claims credit for putting a lot of this together, and Jefferson wanted to have more of a stake in that, and Madison definitely wanted his ideas to be heard more.
Also, if you look at it, looking back, it does seem like the Virginians got somewhat the short end of the deal. I mean, Hamilton got to set up this financial system exactly as he wanted it. Not exactly like he wanted it, but he won out on what the economic system of the United States was going to look like in that moment. And what do his opponents get? They get the stake, they get the national capital, which, I don't know, doesn't seem like big of a deal.
I mean, you know, but this is exactly right. I mean, I feel like there's such a big fundamental lesson here about, you know, what is actually power? And is it where all the people in suits get together, or is it where the money's flowing, right? And I think time and time again, it's been proved out that it's like the place where the money is flowing is really where the real power is. And that's basically what happened here. It's like, sure, we'll build you a building, a little one day's carriage ride away from your home instead of four, sure. And but we're going to consolidate all the real power. Jefferson, by the way, gets to be president. I mean, you know, does
he's
okay.
Yeah. Fine.
He's going to be fine. he's doing all right.
So as we wrap up, you know, on the song in Hamilton, which, you know, I know you two have seen it much more than I have, but, you know, I was struck a little bit about the song really feeling like it was really getting at the idea of power, who's in the room, who's not, you know, that there are upsides to backroom deals sometimes, and that is how it gets done. And I'm, you know, I think that if anything, that's at least as big of a lesson here as much as it is about kind of actual structure of government.
Absolutely. That this is not just a nice sweet dinner where people come together and just sort of hash out their differences over chicken, you know, like it really does. I mean, the stakes are so high in terms of getting it right that I still think that, like, when we think about the first few decades of the founding of this country, it's amazing that that they were able to accomplish all that they did, because it was so hard to get differing parties on board.
And it is a sort of lasting political reality and observation. I mean, Elizabeth Warren tells this story of Barney Frank pulling her aside as they're putting together the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and being like, okay, where do you want it? Do you want it to be like in the Department of the Treasury? Do you want it to be a freestanding agency? And she gives her answer and he's like, okay, done. And then he goes, he rewrites the bill and he votes on it. And she's struck in that moment that, oh, if you're actually in the room, this is how decisions are made, just like through these side conversations that then, in this case, like restructure part of the federal government. And so it is a kind of lasting political reality.
Yeah. And we've talked so many times about the, you know, benefits and the pitfalls of backroom deals and just two people hashing it out, you know, after months of negotiation, just sitting down and hashing it out, and who gets to be in that room and who doesn't. And I guess in Hamilton, it's Aaron, it's the song is sung sort of from the perspective of Aaron Burr, is that right? I'm like a time traveler from 6 years ago who has seen Hamilton for the first time, right? And so I'm like noticing all these things, but you know, but yes, it's sung from the perspective of Aaron Burr, who I don't think that's historically accurate that Aaron Burr's like nose was pressed up against the window being like, I want to be in there. But from a artistic perspective, it makes sense to kind of have someone who doesn't feel like they're invited into the right rooms. But yeah, who gets to be in those rooms and who doesn't is obviously a really important thing. Okay, might as well revel in my Hamilton naivete here. Where does that song rank on the like terms of people's kind of sense of the best songs from the? Is that like a big key song in the in the play?
I mean, it's a big song, but I wouldn't say it's everyone's favorite.
It wasn't my favorite, I'll just say that. I was like, huh, okay. Really? This is...
I just love that. I love the first song. I love the Alexander Hamilton song. Yeah.
I think that it's not the most, like, emotionally resonant song, but it has bequeathed this language of the room where it happens, which
yes, that's
I believe
true.
Was the name of Bill Barr's book.
Yeah.
Recently came out. Yeah. So it entered the political lexicon in a renewed way.
Yeah.
Thanks to that song.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We will end it there. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia.